Okay, good evening everybody and welcome to this evening's tele-seminar called The Magician's Way. My name is Damien Sen and it's a great pleasure having you on the line this evening. In a few moments from now, I'll be introducing our very special guest, William Whitecloud. But before I do, please allow me to share how this call will work this evening, particularly if this is your first peopleyoushouldmeet.com call that you've tuned into. Now, we're going to be on the call for around about an hour, and over the course of the hour, I'll be asking William a whole series of different questions on our topic. Some of the questions will be my own, but the vast majority of questions will have actually been submitted in through the People You Should Meet website by you, our listeners. Now, I actually first came across William's work probably a year and a half ago now through a close mutual friend called Darren Eden. Now, Darren Eden came over to the UK from Australia, and after quite an extensive working relationship with William in Australia, developing lots of incredible intuition workshops over there to actually take the work further afield. And I became very good friends with Darren Eden, and Darren's actually also appeared on the People You Should Meet program a couple of times. And when Darren actually got over here, one of the first things he did was actually share William's book called The Magician's Way with me, and I absolutely relished it and read it from cover to cover, probably in a couple of sittings, and really was taken aback by just this whole process of letting go of our conditioning and really allowing ourselves to step into a real more magical way of being. Now, William is, as I mentioned, an author and also a facilitator of workshops over in Australia, and it's a great pleasure for us to have him on the People You Should Meet program. So welcome, William.
Thank you, Damien. A real pleasure to meet you. Darren's told me a lot about you, and just judging by what I've seen of your work, doing great work, and just so happy to be on the line now with you and people all over the world. How magical is that?
Now, I also just wanted to formally acknowledge you for the early rise this morning. you're calling in from Byron Bay. It's 7 a.m. It's a very impressive way to start a Friday morning.
Well, you know, a lot of people get up at this time as a matter of course. And as you said to me earlier in our pre-call, magicians tend to be slow risers, and that's very true. People might need to be sending me a bit of energy here.
Cool, brilliant. Now, I actually thought we'd just start at the very top, William, and I was just wondering if you could actually share with our listeners at home what exactly is the Magician's Way?
Thanks, Damien. It's a question I've rehearsed very well being on a book tour. I know the answer. First of all, people are always asking me what is magic? You know, what do I mean by magic? A lot of people have a very hocus-pocus kind of relationship with the word. And it's not a word that has been in my vocabulary for long, I must say. But when I wrote my book and I was writing my book, I just realized it's the only word really that I can use. It's just the best word to use to describe what I'm talking about. And because what I'm talking about is if you imagine if magic was real and if you were really a magical being, then you just imagine yourself as a magical being who's come to Earth. Then you imagine, well, what would life be like for a magical being? And life, you'd have to. We all have a sort of sense of what that would be like. What magic is, and so you'd imagine this person would have an incredible life. Things would happen very easily for them with very little effort. It would always work out in their favor. And it also would happen in very surprising ways. There wouldn't be just a stale idea about what life is about. Life would be fresh, surprising, full of awe. It would be full of awe and it would be wonderful. And things would just always be working out. And so you'd have this very magical, pleasant experience of life. And I was saying, if you imagine for a moment that it was true, and I put it to you that it is true, that we've all actually had states of grace where things just flow beautifully for us, and then they don't, and we just think, well, that was accidental, or we attribute it to some force outside of ourselves, or some way that we were in the zone that we don't understand how. And yet you can learn to, at will, put yourself in that zone and generally live your life out of that zone. And that's the magician's way, is that ability. It is first of all the recognition that you are a magical being, that you are endowed with magical powers, and that you can set up structures in your consciousness that will compel that kind of life for yourself, that putting yourself in the zone. And so that's the magician's way. That is magic, and that's the magician's way.
Great. Now, we're going to pick up on something you mentioned there, William, about living in the zone and it being an essential part of living magically. And I was just wondering, just for you personally, have you always been in that magical zone, or has there been times in your life where you've actually departed from that zone or that way of being?
Oh, yeah, no. if I'd always been in the zone, I wouldn't be doing what I do now. I'd be on some other planet, I think. I was really born into the zone, and I think we all were. I believe we all were born into the zone. I was born in a little country in Africa called Swaziland, and I was born in 1955. It's a long time ago now. And when I was born, that part of the world was incredibly remote. I mean, you can't believe how remote it was. When my father arrived there, 100 miles before he got to the country, the road ran out. This was in 1950. And the road ran out 100 miles before the country. And he asked a guy in a trading store at the end of the road, "How do I get to Swaziland?" And the guy said, if you just keep following this ridge of mountains and keep the sun to your right, you'll get there, you know. So, and people didn't wear clothes. They're just wild animals everywhere. And so this is this environment that I was born into, a very pristine environment, which I lived in till I was 8 years old, and lived in a nature that was absolutely untouched, among a people that were untouched, and who had a very supernatural worldview, and were very magical in the sense of being, you know, awe-filled and not having like too many fixed ideas about how life was, being very heart connected, very very loving people. And then I was taken out of that very rudely and placed into the colonial boarding school system that had a very sort of Christian missionary bent. And there I was really given to understand very strongly in very harsh terms that the way I was and the way that I saw the world and how I felt about myself and how I saw the world and how I felt about people was just all wrong for a start, and secondly didn't matter, and that there was now something else that mattered. And in Africa at that time, the big thing that was impressed on us was that we were involved in progress. We weren't told what that meant really or what the point was, but everything was progressing, and we had to find what kind of cog we could be in this machine and fit in and be a good cog. And without any support in any other direction, I mean, I was just at 8 years old, and as I went through school, just forced to fit in with that. There's no one around me that supported an alternative view or anything. So I just went on this massive departure from who I was, and got totally enrolled in the idea of capital as the prime mover in life in a very mechanistic, linear way of operating and thinking. And actually, I think ended up in the opposite pole of magic, in the extreme opposite pole of magic, which, to me, I did my best and I got a good job and I was earning good money and whatever, but there was a life totally devoid of heart and soul and me, and it was just this role in life that was designed to fill fulfill societal expectation. And it's like that thing that you do in life where you go, well, it's a relationship you'll be in or a job you'll be in, and except for me, it was a life I was in where you're going, well, I'll be like this and then there'll be a payback. They'll give me what I want at some stage, surely. Into my late 20s and early 30s is just this realization that there's nothing, that this is just dry and empty. And, my life broke down very seriously. I developed substance abuse problems. My marriage broke down. My health, I've been diagnosed with two supposedly incurable, life-threatening illnesses. Lost all my money, lost my mind. Just really had a complete breakdown. And through that, was able to just ask myself and look at, well, what do I want? What do I want for myself, and how am I going to create that? So that was my journey to magic, really. And
Well, and did you have a particular turning point where you just thought there had to be another way?
Well, I did. I had a particular turning point, very specifically, because I was suffering terribly from an illness that actually was undiagnosed, and although no one could diagnose it, whether they were conventional medical practitioners, I was seeing professors at university by this time, psychiatrists, psychologists, endocrinologists, you name it, no one could, and a lot of alternative practitioners as well, complementary healthcare practitioners, no one could diagnose me, and yet I was dying before their eyes and my own. And while no one could diagnose me, the oddest thing, looking back on it, it's actually bizarre, is that while no one knew what was wrong with me, everyone had a prescription for me. Everyone had an idea of what I needed to do to get better. And so I was there seeking to fulfill all these often contradictory ideas about what I needed to do. And so I was overwhelmed by masses of therapies and supplements and diets and you name it. And none of it was helping. In fact, it was all making me worse. When I met someone accidentally, or not accidentally, but I mean just by chance, and while everyone had before had said, didn't know what was wrong with me, couldn't diagnose me, this was the first person ever who said, I know what's wrong with you. And not only said, I know what's wrong with you, said, I used to have what you've got now. And I believed them because they described the symptoms. No one could relate to my symptoms. And yet this person didn't only relate to them, they actually described them to me. And I was going, that's it. Wow. And they also, I didn't have to tell them what I was doing about it and what everyone had me doing about it. They told me everything I'd be doing about it now to get better. And I said, yeah, that's right. And they just said to me, look, it's going to kill you. What you have to do is stop doing all of that, throw it all away, and start drinking coffee and wine and have a few cigarettes a day and drink some, eat some steak. Get some red meat into you. Start getting some red meat into you. Now, and they also mentioned a few other things besides. And everything this person mentioned was absolutely anathema to everything everyone else said. It was like that what this person suggested was what everyone else said would certainly kill me. Mm. And yet, because of how I could relate to what they said about it and clearly knew that they because of what they said, they must have had this because they knew. They just knew so well. So I trusted the person, and I did. I stopped doing everything that I was doing, and I did exactly that. I started eating red meat. I started having a coffee with my meals. I started having some wine with my meals, and I started having a couple of cigarettes a day. And I immediately got better.
Wow.
I mean, you know, I'd been on a slide for about 3 years, and you think, well, I've been on a slide for 3 years. I've gone downhill for 3 years, and I'm on my deathbed here, that when I finally start getting well, if I can find out what's wrong with me and find the cure and that, well, you know, over years I'll get better. And I instantly got better. I just came back right away. I was instantly well again. And the thing that occurred to me very powerfully, very strongly, was that it wasn't in the coffee and it wasn't in the steak and it wasn't in the wine or whatever, because to this day, I actually don't feel those things do me much good. They're not things that I particularly enjoy indulging in.
Mm.
But what I recognized, what occurred to me anyway, was that it wasn't a function of what I'd been taking before and what I was taking now, that there was any efficacy in the steak or the wine or anything like that. I recognized that the efficacy was in the shift of consciousness somewhere, that I had had my attention and I had been focused on something so powerfully, and it was creating a certain result. It wasn't the result I wanted. I'd been focusing so strongly on getting better, and it had created a result, but not the result I wanted. And then I let go of that focus and stopped paying attention to that and created another result. So I recognized that there must be a correlation, a correspondence to what you pay attention to. But how does that work became my fascination, because going, well, I was focusing on something I wanted, but I wasn't getting it. So it's a function of focus, but how does it work? And so this was my turning point. It was a very specific turning point. It was a very specific realization. Up to that point, I'd had no interest or knowledge even of self-help, personal development, spiritual ideas of consciousness, nothing. I was living in a mechanistic void, and yet when this happened, I just went, wow. It you know, it was just so obvious. It hit me like a ton of bricks, and that was my turning point. I just went, I thought I'd actually discovered something totally. I thought I was going to get a Nobel Prize for something, you know, for some major discovery. I didn't realize there was a whole movement that understood that your focus creates your reality. I actually thought, and I actually, you know, went to my accountant and was telling them about this massive discovery I made, and they said, so you're talking about your focus creates your reality? And I said, yeah, how did you know even those words? And he said, well, there's a whole movement around this, and there's books and there's workshops, and God, is there? Why didn't someone tell me? But you know, that was my turning point, was this massive realization that your focus creates your reality, and it became a lifetime fascination with me, and not obsession, but passion, really, to discover and determine how that works and how you make it work for yourself.
Mm. Excellent. Now, William, you've actually gone on and you've trained thousands of magicians and helped people access more of their intuitive ability and true nature. And I was just wondering, like, in the all the people that you help and inspire in the world, do you actually see a lot of people actually reaching these sort of crises of meaning or these rock bottom turning points in order to then rebuild their life in a different way?
People often assume that that's what it takes because there are extreme cases like my own where and it seems as though they're the cases that are highlighted and that you become aware of, that people change profoundly and it appears as though they only change through through crisis. And you know, it's been said to me once. I was in a corporate situation, and one of the directors of this company that I was consulting to said to me, "It's all right for you, William. You've had a life crisis. We here haven't. So that's why we're like we are, and you're like you are." But the fact of the matter is that I actually, you know, because you're right. I have trained thousands of people in you know, learning to apply magic in their lives, and the vast majority of them haven't come to it through crisis. There are people that come to it through crisis, and my experience is they have no advantage over people who haven't had any crisis. The vast majority of people I find just in my, and it might be just unique to me, it might not prove anything, but I've only got my experience to go on here, is that the vast majority of people that I work with are successful malcontents, as I call them, successful malcontents, which means that people that are together in life, they've often doing well at whatever they do, and many of them actually have made some good money and whatever, but they just don't feel as though they are that life is totally satisfying for them. That they just recognize that in spite of everything, something is missing. And with the knowledge and awareness around now, people know that it's available to you to be able to, like with anything nowadays, you can get help with anything. If your business is not pumping as much as you want, there's always people now that can help you get your business pumping. And so people recognize now if your life isn't totally satisfactory, well, you don't have to take that anymore. You can change it. It's well understood now, and thankfully so, that change is available. So I just come across people that are people who come to me are typically just investigating change, not out of a deep crisis or anything like that usually, but just more out of an exploration and coming from a place of, well, you know, I want my life to have more love in it. I want my life to be richer in contribution. I want it to be richer in growth. And mostly what they're not aware of, because they just feel it as vague dissatisfactions or vague understandings that it should be better or it could be better. But what they come to realize is that what's been missing is what was missing in my life extremely, in a very extreme way, which is that I was very far from home in terms of who I was, what was true for me to be doing, the way it was true for me to be living, the way it's true for me to be expressing. In other words, to be living my true nature and my true purpose. And we've all been enrolled away from our true nature and purpose in some way or other. And it's then just a matter of supporting people connecting back to their true nature and purpose and teaching them that it is viable, because we develop a sense why we end up not living our true nature and purpose is because of some idea formally right at the beginning that it's not viable, and so then it, you know, what you're learning is that your true nature and purpose not only is viable, but that it's where your greatness lies, and so you know, that's really what I'm ultimately helping people with. The techniques are besides the point. It's the end result, which is getting people back to their true nature and purpose. Mm-hmm. But you know, just to answer your question bluntly, the vast majority of people coming to me aren't coming to me out of crisis.
Mm. Mm. Excellent. Now, I was just also wondering, William, what was it that actually inspired you to move from actually experiencing these new awarenesses and new distinctions to actually stepping forward and actually sharing these ideas with other people?
Well, it happened very organically for me, because I was just relishing it, to use your word. I was just relishing learning about transformation, self-transformation, and change. And I was just really an avid student of all of this. And part of what I was learning was the role of intuition in living your true nature and purpose, in being able to really get in touch with your authentic self, and keep to that path. I was learning the use of intuition in that, because intuition and psychic ability, I think, are a very abused aspect of our natures. Because the way I see intuition and psychic ability being used out in the world is very much in a way that it's used as a party trick, or it's used to try and establish safety and certainty about directions or whatever. But the real purpose, the true purpose of our intuitive and psychic abilities, are to enable us to dissolve our conditioned world views, you see, and be able to see through that, for us to be able to see through our thoughts and feelings, to see through our personalities, right down to who we are and what our true directions are. So I was studying as part of my growth. I was studying intuition and psychic development, and then practicing that by came out that I had a bit of a talent for it. So as I say, it just developed organically, because I just started doing readings for people, and then people asked me, well, how do you know this stuff? I mean, so right, it's so accurate, how do you know it? And I was going, well, you know it, you can do it. And people started asking me to teach them. So I started running little groups, and very quickly people started bringing their friends, and it grew. And then you know, from there it was like, well, I'm teaching these people intuitive ability, but now they just have intuitive ability. So now they're just party tricking. So I've got to teach them what to apply this to. So it just turned out that I had to develop a full body of work, and it just turned into trainings. And so that's what led me to it. It just unfolded very organically out of just a, you know, a passion for what I was involved in.
Awesome.
Which is always, I think, you know, if you have a passion in life, it's And we all do, by the way. But if you find your passion, like I found mine, and in a sense accidentally, you could say accidentally, but if you are involved in your passion, it is how things will always go for you. Passion is the basis of momentum, and momentum is the fuel of creativity, of creating. It's all about momentum, and momentum comes from passion. It's if you're involved in something that you love, that you're passionate about, that's where the organic growth will come from, and where you will grow in a way that just keeps growing and growing and growing, in an unstoppable way, really, like a beanstalk, you know.
Excellent. Now, William, I mentioned earlier on that we've had questions come in from all around the world, and I just thought I'd start asking you a few questions now. I'm just going to kick you off with a question. It's a personal question from Thea in the UK, and Thea asks, what is your most magical creation, William?
It's a really good question. I could really cite many creations as my most magical. It could be a difficult choice because I have many. I mean, just my family, for a start. The fact that I'm alive is a magical creation because I've had several supposedly incurable, life-threatening illnesses. So there are many things that I could point and go, wow, you know, that is just the most magical creation. But it's an intuitive answer because I don't think I would say this logically, because I would think of other things, but logically, but intuitively, I'd have to say the writing of my book is my most magical creation in my life, the writing of The Magician's Way. First of all, it was written very magically. I wrote it when I was undergoing a year of chemotherapy, 11 months of chemotherapy, and my life was actually hell. And that I could even bring myself to write at that time, because I couldn't bring myself to do anything else. There was nothing else I could do at that time other than write. And so, first of all, I wrote the book at a time when I was undergoing chemotherapy. Wow. And then also, you see, I had begun writing the book as a textbook. I'd for a while wanted to write a textbook on the subject of my teachings, and I wanted to write my own textbook because I felt that the books that I referred people to only ever conveyed parts of the work and didn't really convey all of it and to the full extent that I thought it should be conveyed and in the manner I thought it should be conveyed. So I wanted to write a textbook that was comprehensive, also that was readable. And so when I undertook the chemotherapy, I thought, well, this is some time I've got now. I'm not going to do anything else. I'll just get this book out while I'm undergoing the treatment. And what was magical about it was A, that I could write it while I was undergoing this therapy, this treatment, and B, that it actually took over, it overtook me, that by having the end results in mind that I had, and in retrospect now, with what I wanted it to be, it could only turn into a story, and it did. In the first chapter, as I was writing the first chapter of the book, actually as I was writing the foreword of the book, the foreword turned into the first chapter. And the only thing I can credit myself really with in that book is allowing myself to recognize that it was a story, that it seemed to be the underpinnings of a story and just go with that. Mm. And so out came the story. And literally, I never knew one sentence from another what I was going to write next. I remember one time about halfway through the book where I could see three paragraphs ahead, and that was just amazing. I could actually anticipate some dialogue about three paragraphs ahead, and that's the most I ever saw ahead. When the book's based on Seven Secrets of Magic, or it's not based on that, but it conveys Seven Secrets of Magic, and I remember thinking when I was writing the fourth secret of magic, that I should be, I was probably close to the end of the book now. And then when the fifth secret came out, it was like a total surprise to me. And I think when I was writing the fifth, I kind of had a vague idea that there must be a sixth one. But certainly when I was writing the sixth secret, I thought that was the last one. And then, you know, there was the seventh secret, and this whole book unfolded just unfolded out of itself, really just totally by magic. But as all true magic, when something's magical, it just never stops. That's why I was saying, if you do what you love in life, it's unstoppable. It'll never stop. And so it's like that with the book, because the book hasn't stopped. I mean, what is so magical about it is that it's It revealed something about me which I'd never known before, which was that I was a writer. You see, I just had absolutely no idea about that. So one thing about the book is that, well, you know, as I say, I wrote it while I was on chemotherapy. That's amazing. It turned into a story that became Australia's best-selling metaphysical book ever, and now has been published by this great publisher, New World Library, and, you know, just so magical. But it's revealed me, the magic of it is that it has revealed this whole side of me that is just such a joy to be revealed. And now that's something that's unstoppable in me. And now it has, the book has created momentum of this work. Like you said, Darren Eden is now in the UK teaching this work, and from everything I gather, very, very successfully. And he, you know, the magic is going places, and now we're going to the US, and soon we'll be all over the world. And it's just, this book has exploded, this momentum. And it just all came out of this little idea to get a textbook out for the few hundred people that are taught every year. And you know, really through having an intention to powerfully convey the secrets of magic to make it in an interesting way, just through simple intentions, just such a powerful end result that, as I say, just doesn't stop going. It just unfolds and unfolds and unfolds. And the impact of the book, The Magician's Way, is really profound. And I could fight saving my own life as one of the greatest acts of magic, but saving my own life just ends with me. You know, I'll only live a few more years anyway. And in the scheme of things, doesn't matter whether I live 50 or 100. In the scheme of history, it'll be nothing. But the book's not about me. It's about something much greater and much bigger. And it's a life force that's got a life of its own, and it's just beautiful to see it rolling through my life and other people's life and through the world and through the universe. And so that's my most magical creation.
Mm.
If I can call it my own, even.
Yeah. I mean, interesting. Like, just wanted to pick up on the thing you mentioned there, William, with only ever being able to see three lines ahead at any one time while writing a book, but just being totally present to what was unfolding in the moment. And is being totally present a real part of living from this magical space?
It is. You know, look, if I can just answer that with a very quick statistic that I'm sure all of you guys will find fascinating, is At the beginning of this decade in Sydney, Australia, there were 2,000 full-time practicing acupuncturists. And subsequently, the alternative or the complementary healthcare colleges in Sydney turned out another 20,000 acupuncturists over these four-year courses and whatever.
Wow.
And you'll never guess how many acupuncturists, full-time acupuncturists are working in Sydney now, because the answer is 800. There used to be 2,000, 20,000 more were educated, and now they're 800. And
wow.
The thing about that is, obviously, with that extensive flooding of the market and competition from all kinds of acupuncturists, only the best have survived. And the thing that I look at, because I know some really great acupuncturists in Sydney, that have some good friends that I'm totally into acupuncture, and the thing that in looking at it, what's made me realize is what's the difference between these 800 and the 21 odd thousand others? What separates them? It's not what they've learned. It's not their intelligence. Their intelligence isn't that hugely disproportionate. They've learned the same model, the same techniques. The thing is about the 800 that are still practicing is that they are magicians, and they might not describe themselves as such or articulate it as such, but if you look at it the way I look at it and in my language, they are magicians, because what is different about them is that when they practice acupuncture, they're not, and this goes for anyone, by the way, whether you're an interviewer and you earn your living doing interviews, or you're an actor, or you're a writer, you could be an architect or a lawyer. People that are great in their vocations and that stand out above everyone else do so because they are magicians, and by that I mean they're people that aren't solely being guided and driven by the textbooks and the formulas and what they've learned and what's outside of themselves. They're people that have learned to get in touch with themselves and flow with themselves. They trust their own knowing, and so those acupuncturists are people who have the ability to be present. And this is answering your question. They have that ability to be present, so that when they with a patient, they're just there. They're just with the patient, and they're just with themselves. And they're not preoccupied with what other acupuncturists would think, what other medical doctors would think, what the textbooks think, whatever. They're there, and by being present, they know. Through their own knowing, they really get this person. They're one with that person. And you know, that's what magic is about. It's about your inherent connection to everything through all time and space. It's about being connected. I was reading a book called Musashi, about the great Japanese swordsman, and he was in the book, in this one part, he's watching a nobleman trying to paint moving water, and he observed to himself, this guy will never paint moving water because he's not one with it, you see. And great people are one with what they're involved with. There is no separation. And you create that oneness by trusting in yourself and coming from what's in you and just going with that. And you see, while I'm taking a bit of time to answer your question, and apologies for wasting your time, but I do so for a good purpose, because you see, being in the moment is very, very important. But people come about it from the wrong way, because it's assumed that if you're in the moment, that you must get yourself in the moment, and then you'll be able to function properly. But it's the wrong way to approach it, because if you're there trying to find ways of being in the moment, you'll never come into the moment, which is where you want to be, by the way. But by trying to be in the moment, you'll never be in the moment. You'll just make people rich who are there teaching you how to be in the moment. But how you be in the moment is not by trying to be in the moment. It's by being a magician. And being a magician means that you're present to things, that you just trust in yourself, and that you operating on a premise that you know, and that you can trust your knowing, and that you can be in a situation, and that situation will speak to you. You see, and when you have that sort of value or underlying assumption that you then work with, that you can trust, situations. That you can be in any situation, in any condition, and that you can actually trust it. Well, then, you know, you're going to be in the moment, and that situation is going to speak to you, and you're going to know how to deal with that. And you know, I, this is what I teach people, and it changes people profoundly. Just that simple concept that I'm telling you now changes people profoundly. It doesn't matter whether they're artists, whether they're property developers, you name it. When I see people adopting this premise in their life, this value in their life, their paintings change, their businesses change, their relationships change. Everything changes because they're there, and then what they're there with informs them, and they can operate totally functionally within that. But you see, can you get the very important distinction? They didn't try and be present and be in the moment, because that then just creates a whole lot of assumptions about, you know, your subconscious looks at you and goes, well, why are we trying to be in the moment? We can't be in the moment. You've got to make it about something else. Mm. If that's an answer to your question.
No, absolutely. That's really, really very insightful. Now, I'm just going to ask one final question. This one's actually come from Sharon, and Sharon is in the United Kingdom, and Sharon asks, how do you know the guidance you receive is not your imagination at work?
I love it. Thanks, Sharon. That is a great question. How do you know your guidance is not your imagination at work? well, you know, I can answer that question by saying you can be absolutely sure that your guidance is your imagination at work. Your guidance is your imagination. The true voice that in some way we've been talking about here today, well, I've been talking about here today, been talking about how I have been, and I reckon that everyone has been separated from who they really are. And separated from our truth. Like I was just saying earlier, how when we can just trust situations, those situations will inform us. You know, we will, the truth is always there, and the direction's there, and we've been separated from our truth and our ability to really be guided by this knowing, to be one with whatever we're involved in, and then be guided by that. And we've been separated from that, and we've been separated from that by our rational minds. Not that our rational minds are bad, that our rational minds have a function, but in functioning, there's a side effect, and the side effect is that our rational minds separate us from that knowing, because the rational mind just creates preconceived notions, forms fixed assumptions, and brings fixed assumptions and fixed patterns to anything.
Mm.
And what our challenge is to begin living outside of those fixed assumptions and fixed patterns, and come to live in that way that we are informed and guided by what we're one with, what the situations that we're in and the relationships that we're in and the endeavors that we're in, where we're informed by the truth of what we're involved in rather than the preconceived ideas. Now, the mechanism or the vehicle out of our preconceived ideas is our imagination, and so the guidance that we're going to get, that information when we're informed by the moment and the situation, is our imagination. That is the vehicle that supplies us that information. It's just our understanding of imagination and our relationship with it is that over the last few centuries in our endeavor to get very scientific and analytical and rational, we've come to like see the imagination as something that is fantastical and fanciful and full of nonsense. And you see, if you have that relationship with your imagination, because belief creates reality and definition creates reality, and if you have a definition that your imagination is corrupt and unreliable and fanciful and whatever, well, you know, guess what? You are going to get corrupt, fanciful information.
Mm.
And the training, and you must probably seen Darren at work, Damien.
Mm, absolutely.
The training I've given all my students, all the magicians I've trained, is really it's a training in indulging your imagination and giving it free flow. And you see, when you have a relationship with your imagination, that is, you can trust your imagination. That it is reliable, that it has integrity. Well, then you know now you're cooking with magic, because you can actually train your imagination or train your subconscious to trust your imagination to such an extent that then you can actually begin living your life by actually making it up. You can actually just wake up every morning and make up how your day is going to be, make up what you need to know, make up your guidance, make everything up. If you trust your imagination and assume that it has integrity and give it free flow, well then it's going to go like crazy. And in the intuition workshops we do, it's a safe environment where we teach people and allow them to practice just totally making it up. And in that safe environment, they come to realize that everything they're making up is actually true. And so when you have that trusting relationship with your imagination, your life will go to a whole new level, because you will just go into this new paradigm of just making everything up and just realizing how fantastically it works for you, because your imagination is your soul. It is your It is your intuition, and it is your soul. And if I can just say very quickly, I've just had a personal experience where I've had some issues with my son, who's at a Rudolf Steiner school, and he got us all into quite a sticky situation where he said something to a counselor that created a very high alert in terms of the counselor was forced to, from what she had heard, she was legally forced to involve, outside authorities and psychiatrists and everything because of just some language that my son had used in relation to, self-harm and whatever. And anyway, it was a huge this huge conflict and chaos and storm that was created, and all these authorities were involved and that. And the counselor that sorted it all out just said, look, got to the point and established with my wife and I that we had actually been suppressing his darker thoughts. And he's at an age, apparently, now I've just learned, that kids express darker thoughts. And my wife and I had sort of been, suppressing these and not allowing him to express these darker thoughts. And just a simple thing like that, the counselor just said, all that's happened here is that you haven't allowed him to express this, so it's amplifying it and amplifying in his mind, and that's what's being created, you see. And since we've taken that on board and allowed him to express himself more freely in relation to any dark side of himself that he expresses, this whole problem has just totally gone away, and his behavior is totally fine at school, and everything sorted. And it's I just bring this up because it illustrates just how when we allow to express cleanly without fear of anything, without fear of something being wrong or judged, like judging your imagination, you see. Mm-hmm. If you're sitting there judging your imagination, sure as hell it's going to be dark and dysfunctional, but if you allow your imagination to flow cleanly, the waters will purify, if you know what I mean. Mm-hmm. Flowing water is always pure.
Mm.
And stagnant water is always impure. And so if you stagnate your imagination, sure as hell it's going to be impure.
Mm. Absolutely. I love it. What a wonderful thought. Flowing water is always pure. I love it. Well, we're literally coming up to the end of the hour, and I've been really sitting present to all that you've shared this evening, and I've really had a wonderful last hour, I have to say. The anecdotes and the distinctions and the nuances of your experience, and I was also really touched by what you shared with the actual bringing about of your most proud creative moment of actually creating The Magician's Way in the book. And I actually wasn't aware of the fact that you'd written most of it from a hospital bed, and that certainly bring a whole new appreciation for the book from my side of things as well. And I know that people who've actually come along with us on this journey this evening will no doubt will want to find out more about your work and how they can actually participate in some of the intuitive workshops and magical workshops you've been mentioning. So I was just wondering if you could actually share how they can find out more about you, how they can buy the book, and how they can potentially find a workshop.
Sure.
With you as well.
Thanks for the opportunity. Really appreciate the chance to talk to everyone around the world today. It's been great fun. And thanks for the opportunity to give myself a plug. But I'm actually going to start off by plugging someone else, just as a start, if you don't mind.
Sure.
If you live in the UK, in or even Europe, You can do no better than look up DarrenEden.com. Darren Eden worked with me for 10 years. He's a brilliant magician and facilitator, and he's doing great work in the UK. And if you're in the UK, DarrenEden.com, and check him out, because you will be very well rewarded by doing so. Otherwise, and even if you live in the UK, still, just check out my website, www.williamwhitecloud.com, or Google The Magician's Way. It doesn't matter. It'll all go to the same website. And you can learn more about me and my work. And you can also download a first free chapter if you haven't read the book. The prologue and the first free chapter, the first chapter are available free as a download. And you really, from that first free chapter, get a distillation of what the whole book's about, what all the work's about. You won't get the full story, obviously, but it's a really good place to start. And right now, on our website, we have no future work up there, simply because myself and promoters in Australia and the United States are working on a schedule for next year. But watch the space. Also, I would just like to say, I'm very established in Australia, but this work is now really going worldwide. It's fantastic work, and if you would like to see it come to your neck of the woods, wherever you live, if you're in South Africa or in Iceland or wherever, I'm very keen to get to your neck of the woods or at the very least send some very competent people over to introduce the work. Incredible work, powerful, teaches powerfully in the abilities to manifest, to develop one's intuition, etc. And so if you're interested in the work, Do go to the website and just hit the contact us, send us a note, let us know where you are, what you're interested in, and we can begin a dialogue. So www.williamwhitecloud.com, or just Google Magician's Way, The Magician's Way, whatever.
Awesome. And I can certainly vouch for the Magician's Way as a book. It's a phenomenal read, and also can certainly vouch for Darren's workshop over here in the UK for people who are local. It's very, very powerful work, and Darren always speaks fondly, William, all the way through his workshops, of the incredible collaboration and the zest that you both have actually brought this work to the world. So, yeah.
He better.
Certainly endorse it. Great. So I've just got one final question, William. As we bring everything to a close, I was just wondering if you had any final thoughts for people sitting at home wondering whether they can actually embark upon a more magical way of being.
Yeah. Well, you can. The answer is yes, you can. And really, and I don't say that facetiously, cynically, anything. I mean that really sincerely and joyously. Everyone can have a magical life. You can have it today. The thing is, though, if I can just make a little point about this, is that interviewers often ask me, they say, "Can you just tell us one thing that our listeners can do to just change things for themselves now and whatever?" And my honest answer is that's going to get you nowhere. The thing is that there's nothing to change. The truth is that there's nothing to change. There's nothing to fix. It's all right. the part of you that is magical needs no fixing, needs no inspiration, needs no encouragement, needs no whipping, needs no healing. It doesn't need anything. People think that to live a magical life, there's something to do, but they're missing the whole point, which is that there's nothing to do. There's a part of you that you actually got to hand over to. You just got to go, I'm okay, everything's okay, and hand over. We've got to stop trying. You know, that's the whole secret, is stop trying and hand over to this part of you that will, in its own timing, in its own, it's like making wine. You can't just make wine today. You can't press it all and have a 10-year-old wine that you made today. It takes 10 years to make that wine. So go on the journey. But the main thing is today, what you can do today is let go and hand over to your creative spirit. Invite it in through an intention. Just go, you know what? I'm letting go. I intend. Affirm to yourself today that you're letting go, handing over, and trust through this intention, trust that creative spirit is on its way, because it will. The minute, not the day, not the hour, not the year, whatever, the minute, the second that you just decide to give up, as it were, to let go, to surrender, and let this force take over you, take this subconscious force, this superconscious force, then it will. That and that's my promise.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, William, for sharing your life's work, and for actually immersing yourself on your path and allowing your creative spirit to guide you. You have absolutely shared something quite remarkable with the world, and I just wanted to honour and acknowledge you for taking that path, and also to thank you for sharing the past hour with me.
Thanks. Thanks, Damon. Really, really appreciate it. Can I just say one last thing?
Sure.
With what I've just said now about the thing that you can do, I actually, do a 30-day challenge with people, where I challenge them to actually do that every day of their life for 30 days. And I say, if you want to totally transform your life, do this for 30 days. Just every day, take time out to just surrender and affirm to your creative spirit, your superconscious, whatever word, whatever language you have for it, your inner magician, whatever. Just every day, take some time out to just surrender and invite your creative spirit in, to affirm to it, to make an intention that it take over in your life. And just do that consistently for 30 days. And I've never spoken to someone who at the end of 30 days hasn't said to me, man, my life is totally transformed. I have, by the way, but it's people who didn't do it every day. but for the people that did it for 30 days, their life was totally transformed. And I just really encourage everyone to try that on, because why wouldn't you? Why wouldn't you want magic to take over your life?
That's a beautiful thought to finish with. Awesome. Thanks, William. And for people listening this evening, you may actually want to listen to this interview again. And what we do with people you should meet is actually make all these recordings actually available on the site very day after we actually record them. So please do come back to the site and check out the recordings page and do listen to this recording time and time again. Also, if you feel as if something in this interview has actually sparked something inside of you, and you know that it's going to actually have a powerful impact on a friend, a family member, a loved one, a colleague, I do invite you all to take that step forward and actually share this powerful work with other people around the world. It's amazing just these little steps that we can take that actually can have a profound difference, not in our own lives, but also the lives of others. Great. So final thing is thank you, William. I really appreciate spending the time with you, and thank you, everyone at home.
Thanks, everyone at home.
Cool. Have a good evening. And William, have a good morning.
Thanks.
Okay.
My day is just beginning.
Cool. Take care.